Well, it's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio this morning Toby Edmonds for another edition of You Ought to Know.
Good morning, Mike.
And what a wonderful time. I mean, it might feel like it's down around freezing, but we know it's going to 45. The snow is rapidly turning into water, et cetera. And how do you feel about this change of season?
Yeah, just unbelievably excited. It was a little bit over trying to figure out where to stash snow piles at the shop and everything else. So it's so nice to see it start to melt and moving into warmer weather with more daylight, and looking forward to some campfires and barbecues and sunshine.
Okay. All right. Well, I was thinking, doing some reading about noise over the weekend, in particular, the effect of noise on people, sounds. And in part, I'm also bringing it up because I've ridden in a variety of different vehicles recently, and I haven't whipped out my app on my iPhone, which tells me just how noisy things are, which I sometimes do because I find that there are distinctively different sound levels in the interior of vehicles. I notice this because I may have to turn up, if I'm listening to something on the radio, I may have to turn it up and up and up just to hear it, while in another vehicle, I don't have to do that.
You have all sorts of degrees of different quality of sound systems, speakers, but you're right. You also have vehicles that, have better acoustics. There's their ability to absorb sound, whereas, others, it just depends upon the mechanics of the vehicle as well as the sound system. But, I can turn my radio up in my car just a little bit and be just fine. If I get it too loud, it'll definitely run me out of the car.
Sure.
Whereas, in one of my older, parts trucks, I get in there and going down the road with especially as loud as the vehicle itself is and how well insulated it, a lot of road noise gets in there. I have to turn it up significantly higher just to hear it at the same volume. Of course, age doesn't help either,
Well, that adds the other component to sound. We talk about the shake, rattle, and roll, the various, start out with a new car and if there is a little bit of a squeak somewhere, you hear it.
Oh, absolutely. It drives me nuts. And actually, that's very common for, especially with the female demographic. We get far more complaints about squeaks or rattles or bumps or clunks from women than we do men. And I can say it, me for one especially, it's absolutely irritating to have those noises as you're going down the road.
So let me ask you, in your experience of all the vehicles you've ever been in, which has been the quietest?
Hands down, the newer Audis.
Ah.
Really, really close right behind it is the newer Mercedes. They're so quiet. Although, recently I was in a newer Hyundai, mm-hmm. Hyundai Elantra, mm-hmm. and I was quite shocked about how quiet it was, too, especially when you're standing outside of the vehicle. There's a couple times I had to look around and try to figure out whether or not it was on or, is it running? Is it not running? It was shockingly quiet. I will give it that.
And along with the sound quality, of course, there's that other factor I can remember from the old days, vibration, where I knew it was on because I could look out over the hood and it was shaking.
Yeah, not so much nowadays.
No. I've been in vehicles and there's no indication that there's anything.
Yep, no movement whatsoever. My husband has a Duramax, and one of the dealerships I used to work at back in the day was a Chevy dealership when the 2005, 2006 models just came out. And I remember when those trucks came out, the Duramaxes in particular, we had a lot of people come in and complaining and concerned about the fact that they were getting a lot of movement from the hood mm-hmm. when they were driving. And our truck does it as well. If you get to go on highway speeds, you can see the hood start to come up and there's a lot of movement in it. And that's quote unquote normal. You ever try to explain something like that to an individual who just paid, $40,000-$50,000 for the truck, which now in comparison is not nearly, that's actually cheap today,
right,
by today's diesel truck standards, but still, you know, brand new trucks. Oh, don't worry about that movement from the hood when you're going down the road. That's normal.
That's normal to have it shaken that way. Right. Well, over time, I'm guessing that there's been a lot of attention paid to the acoustics within a cabin, and even the material selection that is there, some that would be more sound absorbing than just flat, hard surfaces.
You know, you are starting to see that in some of the lower end vehicles. You know, there you're starting to see a little bit more attention, especially as we get into things like CarPlay, or, you know, where you can hook up your iPhone or your iPod or your smartphone and listen through to your own music through stereos. You're starting to see a lot more attention paid to stereo systems and the quality of sound. You know, Mercedes, Porsche, Volkswagen, Audi, they've always had their varying degrees of sound systems. And in fact, when you go in to buy a new vehicle, you're going to see that. You have your base sound system, and then you're going to see some optional sound systems. And to me, it's well worth the extra $400 or $500 or whatever that extra package is to have that higher quality sound system, just because you're going to enjoy it as you're, you know, driving. You know, it's, to me, having music playing in my car is just something I have to have. You know, I like to listen to stuff. I'll listen to audiobooks. I'll listen to podcasts. You know, I listen to pretty much everything when I'm on my car. So to me, having that higher quality sound system is well worth the extra money that you pay for it. And, you know, with a lot of cars, like you just pointed out, you know, you do have, it's not just about the sound system. It's also about the construction of the vehicle as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're absolutely right about that. You know, it's not just about aerodynamics or, you know, body parts holding up sheets of metal or fabric. You know, there is some thought and design put into how well can you listen to music as you're sitting in this vehicle. So, but you are starting to see, you know, a little bit more attention paid to the type of stereo that's being put into some of these newer cars as people are going in to purchase newer vehicles. And they're becoming a little bit more discerning too, you know, about what they buy, because you know, the economy has kind of shocked people a little bit. And yeah, we are starting to see used new car sales, you know, come back up. But, you know, people are a little bit more discerning about it. You know, they want to make sure that they're getting the value for their dollar.
And of course, there's that other thing that happens when you begin to listen to the sound is realize, particularly if you have a modern system, that you can adjust where the sound is coming from. To throw it to a speaker, more to the side, to the back, to the front, and all the rest of it. And I found myself sometimes trying to listen and say, oh, well, wait a second, I can change that. I can make the sound come from a different place, and that might help things.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, it's been pretty easy to do. It's sort of an intuitive process once you hit a button that says audio.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually, these days with a screen, some kind of diagram that is showing you where all the speakers are and where the sound is balanced from at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that seems to be helpful.
Yeah, you get some sort of choice, or, you know, a little bit of customization of your sound system. Once again, it really depends upon the sound system that you have.
Okay.
Obviously, the more higher end the system, the more options or the more fine tuning that you can do. I will freely admit there's some options on my stereo. I have absolutely no idea what it does. None. So I don't fiddle around with it. I leave it alone because I have no idea what it does.
Okay.
But you know, you're right. You do have the basics where you can choose to throw the sound more up towards the front, more towards the back, left, right. You know, you have the bass, you have the treble, you have, you know, you can adjust all that stuff. Those are all pretty common settings that most people are familiar with. But especially once you start getting into aftermarket stereos, and I'm just going to dip my toe in here because I am definitely not a professional by any means when it comes to aftermarket stereos. But once you start getting into aftermarket stereos, I mean, it gets far exceedingly more complex after that, as far as what you can do with the sound quality and the positioning of the sound. It can get very intricate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, that was my question to start. But you might have had another topic you were going to deal with. Go for it.
I actually read something very cool over the weekend because I'm sure, you know, I'm not the only one to be kind of, you and I have talked about it before too. You know, it's kind of the lamenting of the loss of the old ways of, you know, man and machine and everything's become so automated on the vehicles and you have automatic windows and I was actually on a side note, I was also reading another post. It showed a picture of an old school, you know, fashioned window regulator with the actual crank handle and said, I wonder how long it's going to take everybody to figure out that we don't need to say, can you roll up the window anymore? Because, you know, it's not a hand crank anymore, it's a button, you know? So, but anyways, you know, I was reading something really cool and about how, you know, kids, as they grow up and as they're starting to learn how to drive, because manual transmissions are so far and few between anymore, because a lot of manufacturers are opting not to produce them anymore, mm-hmm. how it's increasingly difficult to teach them how to drive stick shift. And we've talked about this before too. You know, I was a service advisor for years for dealerships. And it would always kind of get me when I would give one of the lot attendants a set of keys to bring a vehicle up or move it or whatever. And, you know, they would come back in shortly thereafter and say, I can't, it's a stick. And, it, you know, it just floored me. And I will have to say, too, one of my own lot attendants the other day, I just found out he can't drive stick either. So, it is becoming increasingly a lost art. And there is a car insurance company called Hagerty. They specialize in insuring collectible vehicles, but they actually travel around the United States and put on classes for people age 15 to 24 to learn how to drive stick shift. And it's on a closed course and they do use collectible vehicles, but you know, they will actually teach you how to drive a stick shift, a manual transmission. And I thought that was absolutely astounding, because one of the great things about driving a manual transmission, especially for somebody who's just learning how to drive, is first of all, it forces them to concentrate on driving. You know, you got the transmission, you got the foot movement, you got the steering. You know, there's no time for fiddle farting around with your phone or anything like that. I mean, you have to drive that vehicle, and as a byproduct, it really shifts that focus. It really forces into perspective that relationship between the driver and their vehicle. You know, as you're driving a stick, you know, you have to feel the transmission, you have to feel the clutch, you have to feel the RPMs of the engine. You know, it really makes you become very aware of what your vehicle is doing. And it, in my opinion, it really cements in a young driver's mind the importance of the machinery that they're motoring down the road in, and making sure it's safe and making sure it's well taken care of, and the responsibility and the weight behind it, because they're forced, you know, that feeling is there. They're forced to feel that vehicle. And so I, you know, making, you know, young drivers, I have a 15 and a 17-year-old that I'm actually struggling with trying to get them to drive stick. It was our agreement ever since they were real young that, you know, when you learned how to drive a vehicle, it was going to be on a stick shift transmission. And one of them I'm succeeding with, the other one I'm still kind of, it's kind of a struggle.
So to get a sense of things, do you have a feel for how many of the vehicles that come into your shop, what percentage are stick?
You know, I was actually thinking about that while I was reading this article, and my gut reaction was to say, oh, you know, easily 50 to 60% of the cars that come into my shop are stick. And then I got to thinking about it, and come to think of it, you know, really it's within the last couple of years, really, it's dwindled significantly to where I'd have to say probably 30 to 40% of them are stick shift now. You know, it's but the type of cars that I deal in, you know, you were able to get manual, you can get manual transmissions all day long.
Sure.
You know, Volkswagen and Audi have always been really good at making sure that you know, you still have that driver experience. So, you know, you can still get that manual transmission.
But my impression also is that, with the exception of some extraordinarily high-end cars, you know, Porsche, perhaps, that there's a tendency to have in big SUVs and big sedans an automatic transmission.
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually one of the things I was about ready to comment on is that even though in the past couple of years, you know, it was really easy to get a manual transmission. I mean, you could literally walk onto the lot of a Volkswagen or an Audi dealership and find, it's not like it was a special order item. It was something that you could find relatively easily. Mm-hmm. But just within the last, I don't know, 6 months, you know, a lot of their newer models are starting to roll out. They are doing away with a lot of the manual transmissions, you know, especially once you start getting up into the all-wheel drive vehicles. You know, it's you can't get them, at least not over here in the States. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's, but as we start to see the manual transmissions go by the wayside, like when I was down in Florida, I was driving a Mercedes that had a 9-speed automatic transmission. And I will have to say that it probably shifted better than the majority of the people that I ride with on a daily basis that can drive stick. Mm-hmm. You know, it did a very nice job of maintaining RPMs because it was a turbocharged vehicle. Mm-hmm. So it did a very good job of maintaining the boost on the turbo as it was shifting gears. There was, you know, multiple different settings. I could choose to shift it, quote unquote, manually with the paddles behind the steering wheel. So, you know, I'm not saying that is by any ways a direct replacement for a manual transmission. It's not. Definitely not, in my opinion. I prefer to drive a stick. And like I said, it's because that relationship that you're forced to have with your vehicle.
Right. What about racing?
That is different. Race cars will typically have it is an automatic transmission, depending upon the type of racing that you're doing or the type of car that you're doing. But race cars, you'll see them with an automatic transmission or a variation on that automatic transmission. But it's done for consistency. Mm-hmm. It takes the driver error out of it. You know, if you've ever been down to the racetrack down in the Butte, I'm sure you'll, you know, as you're sitting up there in the stands, when you have like the normal everyday drivers out there that are driving and going down the track, you can hear them every now and then. They'll drop a gear. And so you can hear it. So for when you start getting up into like the real dedicated race cars, they are an automatic transmission or variation on such. So that way they have that consistency. Driver's not dropping a gear.
Okay. Also, I'm thinking my observations about when we talk vehicles, large vehicles, buses, big trucks. There seems to be a move toward automatic transmissions there as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it comes back to, first of all, you are starting to see a lot of people who just simply do not have the experience or the ability to drive stick. Mm-hmm. So in order to appeal to drivers everywhere, you know, they're putting automatic transmissions in them. But also as the technology behind automatic transmission increases, and you know, we're starting to get up into, you know, it's not just the 3-speed transmission anymore with overdrive. I mean, we're talking like 8, 9, 10-speed automatic transmissions. And it actually helps with the miles, the MPGs, the fuel economy of the vehicle. Because as you have these transmissions that are getting increasingly more intricate mm-hmm. with more and more speeds behind them, you are seeing that, you know, they become a little bit more fuel efficient. Because they're able to use the speed behind the engine in a more efficient manner. Automatic transmissions, they are vastly improved over what they used to be. They're obviously more expensive to maintain and more expensive to put in the vehicle than a manual transmission. But, you know, you have that trade-off of, you know, it appeals to more people and they are easier to drive, allowing the driver to theoretically be able to concentrate on the road more, which we all know is not necessarily true.
Well, of course, and just to, as we're finishing up here, what I've noticed, I've been reviewing some newer vehicles and the and even in lower price ranges, all kinds of when we talk about automatic stuff, pedestrian avoidance, for example, and we've talked in the past about passing alarms that will tell you if somebody is in the lane to your right as mm-hmm. you're trying to cut back in, things of this sort, which are presented as driving aids, but also sort of fit into this category of making the operation more automatic.
I'm a little bit harsher. I prefer to see it as dumbing down the driving experience. And like you, I see that the positive benefits to these types of, as we move into automatic transmissions and crash avoidance systems and self-parking vehicles and ultimately self-driving vehicles, you know, the concept behind the manufacturer's logic is sound. They're trying to make the experience safer for everybody. And I do get that, but I think, unfortunately, what we're going to see actually more increase of is people who just stop driving after a while. They just let their car do it for them. And it's not only is it a lost art, but it's also, you know, lack of responsibility. You know, I don't care if the car drives itself, parks itself, washes itself, fuels itself up. At the end of the day, you're still responsible for that machine. And because that's what it is. A car is a machine. Mm-hmm. And you're still responsible for it and what it does. So, you know, we still need to have that relationship with our cars that forces us to concentrate on what that machine is doing at every moment of every time that we're behind the wheel. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, it's still our responsibility.
Okay. Well, you mentioned one thing that's kind of a example of being able to handle your vehicle, and that's parking. Have you ever been in a so-called self-parking car?
I have not yet.
Parking-assisted car?
No, not yet. I'm really excited. I'm probably going to be going down to SEMA this year. I'm really excited to see if I can find a car down there. I would really like to try it out. I know that Volvo has a very nice system. I've heard a lot of people talk about very highly, you know, it's very cool. And I can't wait to try it out. I'm very excited.
Oh, well, I look forward to your report, because that's usually the test. You know, if you're driving, you're learning how to drive. Can you
parallel park?
Can you get the sense of where all the different pieces are and the turnings and the rest of it?
Spatial association. Actually, I learned how to parallel park right across the street from here.
Oh, okay.
When I was a kid. And then this is where I took my driver's test and everything, just right across the street. I was
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, Toby Edmonds, we have just about used up our time for today. So last comments before we are done.
Yeah, it is something I've got, something kind of exciting that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
End of May, my shop Edmonds in Port Auto is, with the Wheels to Prosper program, is going to be doing a car giveaway.
Yeah. Oh my.
It is going to be somebody who is in need of a vehicle. If you know somebody who is having kind of some hardships right now, And may need a more reliable vehicle, or maybe they don't have a vehicle at all. We are looking for submissions. It does need to be in written form. You can either bring it in and drop it off at Edmonds in Port Auto, a nomination for somebody, or you can email it to us. You can go to our website. There is a contact tab on our website, edmondsimportauto.com, that allows you to attach a file and you can send it to us.
Okay.
Or like I said, you could do it the old-fashioned way too and either mail it to us or come in and drop it off. But we are seeking nominations for people who are in need of a little bit of help and need a good, dependable, and reliable vehicle to make that happen.
Wow. Sounds wonderful. Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for coming in for another edition of You Ought to Know. We'll be looking forward to next week.
All right. Thanks, Mike.